Tom Nichols is a professor of national security affairs at the U.S. Naval War College, and he's written a terrific new book called The Death of Expertise, the subtitle of which is The Campaign Against Established Knowledge and Why It Matters. I think it's the perfect book for where we are in America right now. I just want to read to you something he wrote in the preface. He says, the United States is now a country obsessed with the worship of its own ignorance. It's not just that people don't know a lot about science or politics or geography. They don't, but that's an old problem. And really, it's not even a problem insofar as we live in a society that works because of a division of labor, a system designed to relieve each of us of having to know about everything. Pilots fly airplanes, lawyers file lawsuits, doctors prescribe medication. None of us is a Da Vinci painting the Mona Lisa in the morning and designing helicopters at night. That's as it should be. Now, the bigger problem is that we're proud of not knowing things. Americans have reached the point where ignorance, especially if anything related to public policy, is an actual virtue. To reject the advice of experts is to assert autonomy, a way for Americans to insulate their increasingly fragile egos from ever being told they're wrong about anything. This is our new Declaration of Independence. No longer do we hold these truths to be self-evident. We hold all truths to be self-evident, even the ones that aren't true. All things are knowable, and every opinion on any subject is as good as any other. Tom, that is such a great summary of where we are today in 2017 in the United States of America.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. I want to start with two words. Fake news. Two words that I think are being overused these days. What do you think?
I think they're being overused and used inaccurately at the same time. There really is such a thing as fake news. I'm a Russia expert. That's primarily what I've done for a good part of my career. And fake news, the Russians are masters of fake news. They will set up fake websites and plant stories. That's what fake news is really about. It's putting out whole cloth, lies made out of whole cloth, sprinkled around the internet and other outlets, and then reported on as if they're real in order to hijack the public debate.
Mm-hmm.
The way we use fake news today is anything you or I don't happen to like, we simply label it fake news.
Yeah, I disagree with that. So it's fake.
We disagree with.
Yeah, and so we're confusing fake news and propaganda, aren't we?
Absolutely, and we're also confusing fake news with spin or bias, which are real problems in the media, and I talk about them in the book, with errors that normal human beings can make and that are corrected or retracted or rewritten. Those are all different from fake news, but the problem is that people want to cherry-pick the stories that they already agree with. So if you put stuff out there that you know already has a market, that you know people already want to hear, they'll pick that up and they'll reject everything else as fake or biased or slanted.
Yeah, you said something there that I think is also vital to this conversation, and that is when somebody makes a mistake, if they correct it, then that can really fix things, although quite often the correction is buried somewhere, either online or in print or even in broadcast. It's not concurrent with when the mistake happened, and so people might have heard the mistake and assumed that it was true. That's not the same as making stuff up, is it?
No, that's right. Making stuff up is making stuff up. Getting something wrong is not the same thing as sitting down and intentionally creating something that you know is false and that you've crafted to be false intentionally, and then spread through the news, through fake websites, through compliant propaganda artists who are masquerading as journalists. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can spread these fake stories, but that's not the same thing as getting something wrong.
Yeah, I want journalists to say to the people that they interview, if you cannot provide solid evidence of your claim, I'm going to assume it's a lie that you made up. We'll never get that to that point, will we?
I don't think they have to be that confrontational, but I think it's always good when somebody makes a claim that's pretty out there. And, you know, this is, we've just been through an election and a pretty contentious couple of years in this country. I think anybody who makes a claim that's outlandish, the next question should be to put up or shut up.
Yep.
That you have to actually deliver the goods and show how you got to that. You can't just say, I think it's true, or I feel it to be true,
mm-hmm.
which is a real problem out there.
Or I heard people are saying.
Yes, people are saying, or when it comes to urban legends and myths, it's always a friend of a friend. You know, hey, I heard that there are, alligators in the subways of New York. Well, did you see them? No, but my friend has a friend and it's always two or three steps removed of somebody that you swear is real that it could have happened to, but it's never you. And that's how these stories get started and just never die.
You know, I used to get emails from listeners with some outrageous story that somebody heard about how, you know, staplers cause cancer. And they're sending it to everybody on their mailing list. And when it got to me, I would write back and say, stop sending out stuff like this until you check it with Snopes.
Right. Which, I do the same thing when I get things on my Facebook page. Excuse me. And I'm the buzzkill guy. I send it back and say, no, I know that's a great story, but it didn't really happen.
Yeah. And some of these
don't want to hear that.
Some of these stories go around and around and around and around, and you know, they sit in their office all day long and they're bored at work, and so they're checking out things, and somebody sends them something like that, and now they have to share it with everybody, not just by email, of course, but on Facebook especially.
Because, well, they want it, this, and this is part of the problem, Paul, is that they want it to be true. Because it's interesting. Because it's more interesting than the boring reality of daily life. So, you know, it's not just that it's interesting and kind of emotionally charged. It also gives the person who sends it a kind of thrill of knowing secret knowledge, you know, that you're informing all your friends. Hey, you didn't know this,
yeah,
but I know who really controls the weather. You know, I know who's really in charge of the dollar, and it makes you feel smarter just by sending it, even though it's completely false.
Now, in the vast majority of cases, stuff like that, you know, staplers causing cancer or other nonsense that goes around, that doesn't really hurt anybody, although if stapler sales decline, the people who make staplers, you know, swing line would be very upset about that. But what are the consequences of rejecting expertise?
The consequences are, you can have consequences that are directly fall on you. If you believe stupid stories about vaccines, you can end up in a situation where, you know, you don't take care of your health.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get shots you need.
And you endanger your kids' lives and all the other kids who are not being covered because we lose herd immunity.
Right. And the other problem is that you can do, on a social scale, you can end up engaging in a thing that starts a moral panic. You probably remember back in the 80s when people started to believe that children were being abused all over the country at daycare centers, and these witch hunts began about cults and Satanists and all this crazy stuff. And that harms society because not only do innocent people get swept up in that, but it obscures a real problem. I mean, children really do get abused. There really is a problem, you know, with neglected kids or kids that are abused. But when this kind of a moral panic based on urban legends takes hold, people lose their mind.
Yep.
And that's really dangerous. And this, I think experts, their role is to be dispassionate. It's to approach the evidence. And this is one reason I think people don't like experts. We're the people who tell you the stuff you don't want to hear.
Well, you think that's the reason that people actually resent experts?
Well, I'd like to think that's the only reason, but unfortunately, I think it's a larger social reason, which is that people have become, and the word I use in the book, as you know, is people have become so narcissistic that they cannot endure anyone telling them that they are not the smartest person on any given subject,
mm-hmm.
that they just simply cannot accept that their opinion is not as good as anyone else's on everything. There used to be a time, I think, in this country where people understood, I'm good at one thing, you're good at another. If I, you know, I defer to you because you're, you know, if I want to know about broadcasting, I ask someone like you who does broadcast. If you want to know about Russia, you ask me. What's become different now is that people not only reject that, but they feel the need to lecture you to show you that they are just as adept at it as you are.
Mm.
I started writing this piece years ago that became the book when somebody said to me, you're a Russia expert? I don't think you really understand it. Let me explain it to you. And I finally just said, wait a minute, you know, this is crazy. And you know, I started asking other experts and professionals, and they said, oh, yeah, it happens. You know, and it was people who, bakers, photographers, electricians, you name it, that were all saying to me, yes, you know, there's always somebody over my shoulder saying, I think I know your subject better than you do.
Yeah, these are people who would never go into a bakery and tell a baker, you don't know how to make bread.
Right, right. Yeah, you're not using enough eggs. a photographer said to me that she, you know, she'd be at a wedding, and somebody would inevitably walk up to her. She'd pull out her equipment, and somebody said, what kind of lens are you using there? What are you going to use? What kind of lighting are you going to use? And, you know, she'd say, are you a professional photographer? No, but I know a few things about photography.
Uh-huh.
And it becomes maddening because it interferes with the ability of experts to do their job and to provide the best services to their client, which is society. Professionals, our professional credo is whether we're teachers or doctors or journalists or whatever we do, our client in the end is society. And if people are constantly doubting that we're capable of doing what we're doing, as one surgeon, a lot of doctors talked to me anonymously when I was writing this book, as one surgeon said, he said, I've gotten to the point where I just want to put all the instruments and the medications on a tray and push it across to the patient and say, you know what? You do it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing your spleen. Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah.
It's much more common than you would imagine. I mean, I really, once I started talking to people in other fields outside of my own, teaching and public policy, the stories just started pouring out of my email started filling up with letters from teachers and lawyers and doctors and, again, even people in trades, electricians and carpenters, who felt that other people simply don't respect the expertise that they have in their own field. Mm. And I think that's a really dangerous thing in a country the size of ours that relies on specialized knowledge and labor.
What role do you think social media plays in all of this?
I think social media plays a really destructive role in all of this because social media, which I am a enthusiastic participant in.
Yes, you and I are both, we're both on Twitter and we're both on Facebook and all the rest.
I feel like, you know, in part, I enjoy Twitter, you know, as a social activity, but also as a teacher, I feel it's part of my responsibility to reach out and answer people's questions and engage with the public. But the Twitter and Facebook and other forms of social media create an artificial sense of equality between experts and lay people. That because we're both there on Twitter and we both have Twitter accounts, we both have access to the internet, we're therefore peers. Mm. And the reality is, we're not. The same people that would challenge, an expert on Twitter would never think to do the same thing if that person were their son or daughter's professor, for example. Although increasingly that happens even now.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But this notion that as long as you and I are both on the internet together, then we're absolutely equal is a really destructive thing. And there's one other thing I'd say about social media. It also removes the requirement to be civil. And I'll take a hit here too. I mean, there are times on social media where I'm as uncivil as anybody else. And that's just a function of being alone in front of the computer or with your phone and not really thinking about the consequences of just being rude to other people. Which is something that you are far less inclined to do face to face.
Particularly
good people.
Particularly on Twitter. Particularly on Twitter because you don't have to use your own name. The anonymity allows you to be some rude SOB where you would never do that face to face. Although I think because that's become so commonplace online, more people are doing it face to face.
Absolutely. The anonymity issue allows you to become the worst possible person you could want to be if that's really what you want to do.
Yeah.
And I think, in real life, most people are, I actually am something of an optimist. I think most people are good people. Most people want to be liked by other people. They want to share their ideas with other people. They actually prefer to have a conversation rather than an argument. But when you're on Twitter or Facebook or Reddit, that kind of imperative takes over where you kind of get out your day's frustration. It's sort of the equivalent of coming home and kicking the dog after a tough day. And I think it especially leads people to lash out at experts because, again, we're the people least likely to agree with you.
There's another aspect of the social media that I think is part of the problem as well. And you've written about this in the form of who chooses the trending stories on Facebook. It's not just an algorithm. There are actually people who are involved in doing that and on Twitter and elsewhere. Snapchat now has a news service, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the people who are doing that tend to be younger and may have a very different view of the world and its facts than the real world, right?
Right. And I kind of have a reputation for being the cranky old guy on Twitter who's always admonishing the millennials. And I actually don't, a lot of my students are millennials. I really don't hate millennials. But there is an issue here of kind of youth and inexperience. And there's also the problem of marketization. of making news that people want to see, that you put stuff out there. And I think people in my generation are still just not used to this, that we're still used to the idea that there are things that are important and journalists and editors should sort them out and present them to us in some way that helps us understand what's important. Whereas now it's whatever you'll click on, whatever you'll stare at, whatever will keep you from changing the channel. And that, I think, is really destructive. I think it's important that the media stop giving us what we want and start telling us what we need. But yep. Unfortunately, with curated streams and trending Facebook, the world is constant. This plays into our narcissism. The world is constantly asking us, what is it we want, rather than telling us what it is we need.
Yeah, a story that's more popular doesn't mean it's more true.
Right, a story about the Kardashians or the latest celebrity fandango or the newest shoes, or you won't believe the size of the shark that ate this guy in Australia. These are not things that are as important as the economy or foreign affairs or your local police blotter, but it's what we want. And in a way, it's almost like if the metaphor I always use is diet. There's a lot of good food out there, and there's a lot of healthy food out there. But if people left to their own devices, will eat a lot of junk food.
Yep.
And all this stuff out there is just the equivalent of junk food, and it's just as bad for you.
In fact, you have a great thing at the beginning of Chapter 6 in your book, which is called When the Experts Are Wrong. You have a great story about the people who came forward, and these were supposedly experts who came forward and said that eggs were killing us. Will you tell that story, if you would?
Well, first of all, I'll say I took this one personally because I'm a big fan of eggs. So I went for a lot of time avoiding eggs because of that. Doctors for a while had drawn a pretty logical conclusion. They said, well, cholesterol clogs your arteries and they're bad for you, and eggs are full of cholesterol, so clearly you shouldn't eat eggs. And more research they piled up that said, it turns out maybe eggs aren't so bad for you and it's okay to eat them. Well, the problem is people then seized on this because, of course, we always want to find the thing that confirms giving us a license to do whatever we want to do. People seized on this and said, aha, doctors are wrong about eggs. That means I can eat anything I want. No, that's not what it means. It means that they were wrong about a particular effect of a food. That doesn't mean you should eat a bacon cheeseburger and a six-pack for breakfast. But people say, well, doctors get things wrong all the time. Well, doctors don't get the big things wrong all the time. They're human beings. They can make mistakes. They can accidentally kill you, just like a bad bus driver can kill you, or a lousy electrician who doesn't ground an outlet can kill you. But by and large, they know what they're doing more than you do. And people seized on this egg story as an example of why doctors don't know anything.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, doctors know plenty.
Right. And the thing about science is they keep trying to make it more right. They may have gotten it wrong before, but they're going to come around and fix that later on, which is not what happens in so much else of the world, which leads me to the last thing I have to ask you about is, how does our current president fit into this paradigm?
Well, first let me say I don't represent the Naval War College. I represent my own views here.
Okay.
In my view, the president, I think, unfortunately, is flogging this term fake news in the same way that everybody else is flogging the term fake news to mean stuff I don't like. And I think it's unfortunate that, the president's, he's expressed doubts about vaccines, and he's hauled off some kind of shaky statistics about unemployment. But that's what the rest of the system around us is supposed to fix. That's what journalists are for. That's what scholars are for. That's what journalists and broadcasters like you do. So I think it's unfortunate. But I think it's also the way we live today. I think it's the way our politics are today, because the president is certainly not alone on this. Everybody who ran for president the last time around threw a lot of pretty weird stuff out there that needed a lot of fact-checking. And one thing that I would add about all this is there aren't enough fact-checkers in the world to keep up with all of this.
No, it's impossible.
It's impossible. There are too many sources of information, and this is where I keep bringing it back to the voter and to the layperson. That people have to become more discriminating consumers of information. Start with whether you think it's a biased source or not, start with the New York Times or the Washington Post or your local newspaper and work from there. Don't start with what your Aunt Rose sent you as a Facebook meme. Because, you know, the Washington Post can make mistakes, but they're generally going to be more reliable than your Aunt Rose in Schenectady.
Let me just say, I know Aunt Rose. She's an idiot. I never trust her. The book is called The Death of Expertise, The Campaign Against Established Knowledge and Why It Matters. It's a terrific read, and as I said at the beginning, it is perfect for where we are here in 2017. That's Tom Nichols. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.